How's it going, everyone? This is Garrett Corpenning for Locked On Clippers, the official LA Clippers podcast of the Locked On Podcast Network. In addition to this show, I also cover the team for Clipperholics, Fansided's one and only Clippers blog. And you can also find me on Twitter at GA Corpenning. That's GACHORPENNING. There you can send me questions, comments, anything else you feel relates to LA Clippers basketball. So welcome back to the show, guys. It is Friday, May 25th, and it feels so good to finally be at the end of the week. I know I'm looking forward to this long weekend, and I'm sure you guys are as well. So let's kick things off the right way and get things going into this weekend. So to start things off today, I'll be addressing some recent news regarding Mike Woodson and Doc Rivers with the coaching changes that we've seen there. After that, I'll comment on some of the week's biggest stories in my Friday segment, Weekly News Roundup. And to close today's show, I'll give my take on what I think happens this weekend with the conference finals wrapping up. So just a few days ago, the LA Clippers and Doc Rivers recently agreed on a contract extension. And for the first day or so that extension was made official by the team, we didn't really know the exact terms of the deal. But we have since learned that it is a two-year extension, with Rivers being signed through the 2019-2020 NBA regular season. First thoughts, initial thoughts there. I do think it was the right move. We've talked about this for a little bit now. I want to say since the second week I've been on this show, because the deal was talked about pretty heavily before it was made official a couple of days ago there, and just yesterday we got the terms of the deal there, that two-year extension. So I have given my thoughts on this before, but I do want to go back and touch on it again since it is back in the news, and I think it is a pretty important thing to talk about. I do think it was the right move, and that's going to draw some questions, definitely, because, first of all, there is the whole thing with Doc and how he ran the team when he was the president of basketball operations there, and I'm with you on that. I don't think Doc did a great job at all, really, as president of basketball ops there with the Clippers. Made a lot of questionable trades, a lot of weird draft picks and that sort of thing, and it is certainly for the best that he is focusing purely on coaching right now, because me personally, I've never seen a system in which that works, where you have a coach that also functions as the president of basketball operations. I've seen it in the past recently with Mike Budenholzer at the Atlanta Hawks. That worked about a year, and then they fell apart, and now Budenholzer is going to be the new coach of the Milwaukee Bucks, and the Hawks are kind of just in desolation somewhere. And also in Detroit with the Pistons, Stan Van Gundy, prior to this summer, was functioning as the team's head coach as well as the team's president of basketball operations, and he was also recently let go by the Pistons. They're searching now for a new head coach and a new GM as well. Right there, that goes to show that in the past three events here, this has not worked to what it's been expected to, and I think that goes to show that for the most part, this isn't going to be a system that works successfully in the NBA. Certainly Doc as a GM, president of basketball operations, or whatever the exact position was, whatever you want to call it, really, that wasn't a success. But I do think that Doc as a coach is a very fantastic, piece to have on the team there. And I think especially based on what he was able to accomplish this season, in comparison to past seasons, he was very much more impressive, than we've seen him before. So what I mean by that really is that, in past seasons, Rivers did have, guys like Chris Paul and Blake Griffin on the team to help, to help win games, of course, and also really to make him, get that higher win total and that sort of thing. And that, in a way could create the illusion that he was doing a good job or that he was doing a bad job, because, we know better than anything else that when a team falls short in the playoffs, the first person to be blamed for that is the head coach, and often not the players, although the players can make mistakes, that sort of things could be falling on them. But more often than not, the coach does take the blame for that, and usually it's rightfully so. We've seen cases before with, Dwayne Casey just this offseason with the Raptors, that he probably shouldn't have been fired for his efforts there in Toronto, but that's just kind of the way it is. That's kind of the way it works sometimes. That's unfortunate, but, it's a business. That is how it happens. Rivers was a good coach there with Blake and Chris Paul and that sort of team there. But the one downfall of those teams was the early playoff exits. A lot of the fans and a lot of media people always, would always say that Rivers might not be the right fit for that team. Maybe you got to break up the core and maybe pursue a new coaching option there. And the Clippers, instead of firing Doc, they broke up the core eventually. just last summer there. And I think this season really showed us that, you know, all the times when the team fell flat, that might have been more the fault of the players, which, you know, in turn was also the fault of Doc, because he was one of the brothers players in there as the president of operations there. But I think that was also more the players than it was on Doc. And we saw it this year with what he was able to accomplish with the quote-unquote ragtag group of players that he had. You talk specifically about the injuries and the talent level we've had compared to past seasons. You know, injuries always been prevalent with the Clippers. That's kind of just, they go hand in hand there. But the talent level of this team was one that was more comparable to ones we've seen in the past decade or so before Chris Paul. You know, fringe playoff contenders and that sort of thing, with a few, you know, good players, but no all-stars, no superstar players. You know, compare this team pretty well to the 05, 06 Clippers or 06, 07 Clippers there, whichever one of those made the playoffs, Corey Maggette. You know, that kind of team is kind of what we have right now. And I think, you know, considering what Doc did with the roster he had this year with the G League players and with the rookies having to step up and, you know, starting Wesley Johnson almost more than anyone else this season, I think it really goes to show just how good of a job Doc did, because to stay in playoff contention up until the 80th game of the season with a roster like that in such a competitive conference like the Western Conference, I think it really goes to show, one, first of all, how important Rivers is to this franchise and how important he is to the players as well. So I think, you know, what he did this season was pretty extraordinary given the roster he had and the talent he had available to him. And I think that, you know, because he was able to focus purely on coaching and more about work with the personnel he had instead of wondering about who else he can get instead of who he has right now, like who wasn't working, instead of coaching those players to work, he in the past had freedom to just bring in new players altogether, and that might have been messing with team chemistry and the way the whole team functioned and, you know, figuring out lineups and rotations and that sort of thing. So because he was able to focus purely on coaching instead of, you know, coaching and basketball operations in addition, I think Rivers was able to really, you know, reach his full potential as a coach with the roster he had this season. And I do believe that because of that, that is probably the main reason why Rivers earned this extension. His contract, you know, was up after the end of this season. And instead of negotiating a whole new contract, they decided a 2-year extension would be good. And I think it's a good, I think it's a great deal for numerous reasons. But I think first and foremost of those reasons is because it is such a short deal. 2 years doesn't seem like a long time, but given that a lot of Clippers players, their contracts will expire following the end of next season, it gives Clippers a chance to sort of have a transitionary period there. You know, if they don't like what Rivers does next year, they can fire him and get a new guy in there. You know, it gives the team freedom as well as giving Rivers freedom to maybe pursue other opportunities in the future and do his best next season with the players he has available to him and see maybe what the team has planned for the future and decide if Rivers was to be a part of that or not. So I think it was a smart deal for both sides, and I do think that Rivers is going to come back next season and be very successful once again. In addition, I do want to talk about Mike Woodson as well, Doc's top assistant in LA for the past 4 seasons. Woodson has recently agreed to be top assistant coach for the Phoenix Suns, which also recently hired Igor Kokoskov as the new head coach, who is going to be the league's first European-born head coach. That name might sound familiar to you. Kokoskov was also an assistant for the LA Clippers from 2000 to 2003 under then-head coach Alvin Gentry, and Kokoskov then went on to win an NBA title the very next season as an assistant for the Detroit Pistons 2004. He was also previously an assistant for the Suns from 08 to 2013, in addition to all that stuff before that. So Kokoskov, you know, truly a pretty extensive history of coaching in the NBA, was named the league's first European-born assistant coach in 2000 with the Clippers, and will now, 18 years later, be the first European-born head coach in the NBA. So I think Igor will be a good fit for the Suns, and I do think also that Woodson is going to be a nice fit behind him as well. You know, Kokoskov and Woodson, they're both veterans of the game. In terms of that, I just mean, you know, Woodson played, Kokoskov did not, but because they both have so much coaching experience, I think it'll be good for the Suns, a rather young and inexperienced team, to have experienced guys running the team like that. And, you know, in case you didn't know, Woodson did spend 4 seasons in LA before resigning a few weeks back. I think, you know, his time should be seen as successful with the team. You know, he reached the playoffs 3 of the 4 seasons. And, you know, I think he's a good all-around coach, good mind, good presence on the court. And I think Clippers really benefited greatly from having him on the sidelines, and that he'll be tough to replace. But, you know, that being said, I have mentioned in past episodes some potential replacements that I like to fill in behind Rivers next season, including Frank Vogel and Jerry Stackhouse. According to ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski, the Clippers are looking for a defensive-minded assistant to back up Rivers, and Vogel and Stackhouse, I think, are both pretty viable options there. Vogel, you know, is known for running those very, very potent pacer defenses from the past 4 or 5 years there with Paul George, Roy Hibbert, that kind of thing, back when they were contending in the Eastern Conference Finals on a yearly basis with the Miami Heat, led by LeBron James, of course. So Vogel, you know, was really, really vital in pushing that defense to its limits there, and could do the same with Rivers in L.A., especially with guys like Patrick Beverley and DeAndre Jordan, if they're still here next season. And then Jerry Stackhouse, former player in the NBA, just won G League Coach of the Year with Raptors 905 in the G League, and also is a G League champion. So when he does make the jump, which, you know, should be sooner than later, I think, you know, an assistant job would be a good fit to start before transitioning to a full-time head coaching position in the NBA. And I do think Stackhouse would be a pretty good guy to fill in behind Rivers. So, you know, moving on from the coaching situation, I would like to address some of the top stories from this week and touch on some things that you might have missed in past episodes. If your company is interested in advertising to men between the ages of 18 and 44, your company should be sponsoring this podcast. Locked On Clippers is listened to by 98% men, and 80% of those men between the ages of 18 to 44. If that speaks to you and that's a fan base you'd like to advertise to, please message me at gcorpenning@outlook.com. That's GCHORPENNING at outlook.com to get things started. Our rates are very reasonable, and I would love to do business with you and your company. So guys, coming up, I will be addressing some news on the league in, you know, the final segment of today's show. But before that, I would like to review some of the biggest headlines we saw this week. First and foremost, we learned that the Dallas Mavericks are going to have interest in DeAndre Jordan this summer. In addition to Jordan, the Mavs are also rumored to be pursuing Julius Randle and DeMarcus Cousins. As you know, this isn't the first time that we've heard rumors about Jordan going to the Mavs, and it also wouldn't be the first time that Jordan has actually signed a contract with the Mavs or given a verbal agreement to that extent. A few years back there, I'm sure y'all remember by now, you know, the Mavericks were trying to land DeAndre Jordan in free agency, and Jordan did give his verbal consent that he would sign with Dallas before the Clippers really came to his house and, you know, so to speak, kidnapped him and made sure he remained with the Clippers. You know, really one of the most fun nights I've ever had on Twitter talking about basketball and that sort of thing. That's not a man I'm going to forget. So I think it is, it's kind of funny. It's ironic that Jordan is thinking about going back there if he is. But I do think it's funny that the Mavs are pursuing Jordan. And I do think that, you know, Jordan's a tough one right now to figure out because a lot of what the team does with Jordan this season will change the direction of the franchise and will change what has to happen this summer. You know, you let Jordan walk, you're going to have a lot more cap space this summer to sign free agents and that sort of thing. You keep him on a team-friendly deal, hopefully, then that, you know, won't be necessary at all. But like I was saying, I do think it's going to change the direction of the franchise with the choice they make about Jordan this summer. Because, you know, you trade Jordan, that's a whole different story. You let him go, that's a different story. But I think what you got to focus on there is the backups to Jordan right now and what you have to do in the draft this summer to replace someone like Jordan, which, you know, isn't an easy task. You know, the Clippers, you know, we're talking about earlier this week trading up in the draft for Michael Porter Jr., and that would take, you know, the 12 and 13 picks in this year's draft. So you lose DJ and you trade those picks, then you're left with no picks to draft a center in this year's draft, and you're left with a big hole on the defensive end there on the floor where Jordan used to fill in very, very well. You know, maybe you could swing Jordan for another center in that trade there to Dallas. You could include him in the trade, of course. But I do think that what happens with Jordan, whether he re-signs or goes, that is going to change a lot of the landscape for the Clippers in the next few years. But I did mention Michael Porter Jr., and I do want to go a little bit further into that. Porter Jr. has probably one of the highest ceilings in this year's draft class. And if he was totally healthy and there were no concerns about him and his back, which I'll get into in a second here, then he would likely be a top three pick, if not, number one, number two there. So Porter has an extremely high ceiling, but given that he had to get a back surgery in the middle, or not the middle even, the beginning of his freshman year at Missouri and played only three games last season, teams certainly do have a reason to be concerned, especially the Clippers, I think, given, the team's injury history and that sort of thing, and problems managing that. So, do I think trading up for Porter would be worth it with those two picks? Yeah, I do. Two first-round players is almost always better than one, but I do think that at the 12 and 13 picks in this year's draft, you are going to get guys that are more complementary pieces instead of game changers. Guys like Miles Bridges, guys like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, they're going to be good players. They're going to be great players in the NBA, but I do think that they aren't, the face of the franchise. They aren't going to be the top option. They're going to be that kind of person. They're just going to be a guy that you can have up there on the court, perhaps a starter, perhaps not in their first season. And, they're going to make an impact, but someone like Porter Jr. certainly has the potential to make a much larger impact and, could be an all-star in a matter of years, if not, his first. So I do think that trading those two picks to get the number five overall pick, which is the rumored pick they grab him at from the Dallas Mavericks, ironically, that I think that would be a pretty good trade-off. And I think what it's really going to come down to is what happens with Porter and his workouts and what other teams are saying about him leading up to the draft. Because, if he does work out and teams find out that he's not as healthy as he's been saying, or he is healthier than he's been saying, then we could see him go anywhere from the top, number two pick to maybe 10, 11. Probably wouldn't slip in any way down to 12 and 13, which Clippers could grab him without trading up. But, I do think that if Steve Ballmer wants him, and if Jay West thinks it's a good opportunity, he certainly does fit the mold of what West is looking for, then we could very well see Porter Jr. be a Clipper next season. So, and then lastly on today's weekly news roundup, Glenn Big Baby Davis was recently arrested this week on felony assault charges. Not the first time he's been arrested or made headlines in the past year. He also made headlines recently for talking about Austin Rivers and that sort of thing with the way his relationship is with Doc and kind of just trashing the team as a whole. So wish you the best, Big Baby, but not the best look for you, bud. And also, one last thing I saw just recently on Twitter. The Clippers will have a private workout sometime next week for LiAngelo Ball. If you don't know about LiAngelo, he is the younger brother of Lonzo Ball, current point guard for Los Angeles Lakers. And that's, people are concerned about it just because you do have to deal with LeVar Ball and that sort of thing and how big of his presence is. And then also, you have to, first of all, consider the fact that LiAngelo did not play in college because he wasn't able to due to his whole, stealing incident there in China when he was over there. I don't know what he's doing exactly over there, but he was over there and he stole something from a store with a couple of other UCLA players, and that's the reason that he ended up going and playing pro overseas, so along with LaMelo Ball, actually. So LiAngelo, he's not the best prospect. A lot of guys don't even have him on their top 100 big board, and I don't either. He's okay. He won't make a big impact in the NBA, and I don't think that people hyping him up like he's going to be the next star is really a great thing, because you're going to fool a lot of, casual NBA fans, that sort of thing, into thinking that LiAngelo could be worthy of a first-round pick, when really, you watch his tape, you watch his film, you see his numbers and that sort of thing, and he really isn't that impressive a player. So, having a workout with him, that's not the end of the world. Workouts don't really mean anything if it's, guys that, I mean, it certainly means something, but what I'm saying is, you have guys that are late second round, undrafted prospects and that sort of thing, guys that aren't expected to really be, amount to anything in the league. And that's kind of where LiAngelo Ball falls in. So, it's a workout. It's kind of just to evaluate what he can do and see, he didn't get a chance to scout him overseas and that sort of thing. You can see what he's capable of and see what he can do in the NBA. But of course, it is just a workout. It's nothing really major there. So did fans have an overreaction to it a little bit when that was first announced? Yeah. But it will be interesting to see what happens with D'Angelo moving forward, I do think. So to wrap things up today, I will be hitting on some news around the NBA as always. And I'm going to start with the incredible Game 5 last night between the Rockets and the Warriors. The Rockets ended up winning that game 98-94, and I was mesmerized. It was one of the best games I have watched since probably Clippers Warriors, that playoff series 2014 there. It's just been a long time since I've seen such a great game and such a pretty incredible series. It hasn't been really close that far. I'm sure it was a tied series before yesterday, the last two games have been much closer. But the playoffs so far this season have been a whole lot of blowouts for the most part. There haven't really been a lot of close games. So to see ones like this that go down to the last second, and especially in back-to-back games, it's incredible to see. And I really think that if you didn't watch the game, you missed out. You need to watch Game 6. It's going to be incredible. But there is some news for Game 6 that just broke online. Chris Paul, who got injured in the final minute of Game 5 with a hamstring injury that looked all too familiar to Clippers fans, he is going to miss Game 6 of this series. And that's going to be a pretty big problem for the Rockets, since James Harden did shoot just 5 of 21 from the floor in Game 5 and missed all 11 of his three-point attempts. And going off of that, Harden has missed his last 20 consecutive three-point attempts, which is a pretty bad look for him. He's shooting just under 31% in this year's playoffs. So Harden has a chance to step up and be a hero in Game 6 and maybe take home a chance to go to the NBA Finals and face up against the Cavs or the Celtics. But the Rockets, if they lose Game 6, they go back to Houston for Game 7, and it's gonna be a great game there. Chris Paul might be able to play in Game 7. People were doubting it for the most part. So if the Rockets are going to win this series, James Harden will have to step up, and the bench will have to continue playing their best, albeit as a very small bench. The Rockets played a seven-man rotation last night and the game prior to that, and that bench includes Eric Gordon and Gerald Green. They both made a pretty big impact last night. And the Rockets' defense, of course, was also pretty fantastic, holding Golden State just 94 points. So Game 6 of that series is on Saturday at 6 p.m. Pacific time. That is going to be at Oracle Arena, and should be impressive. What I'm thinking for that game, I think Golden State's going to win that game pretty handily. I'm not expecting much from James Harden in Game 6. The Rockets might be better off waiting, honestly, for Chris Paul to come back in Game 7, but that doesn't mean not to try in Game 6, not to even give your best effort. So I do think Golden State wins that game, but it could be a close effort. And if James Harden does step up, that series could be over in six games there. And then to go along with that, the Cavs are going to face elimination tonight at the hands of the Boston Celtics. That's, Game 6 of that series. Boston's up 3-2. And a few questions have arose from that series right now. Most importantly, is this it for LeBron James in Cleveland? And the answer to that is anybody's guess. It's been rumored he's going to leave this summer for quite a while now. And with the team he has right now, it certainly makes sense because the amount of talent there just is almost non-existent. But LeBron has always been incredible in elimination games. He has an average game score 26.8, which is a metric that involves, just about all his numbers he puts up in the game and averages them out to some degree there. I'm not 100% sure about the factoring in that goes to that game score, but I do know that LeBron's game score in elimination games is 26.8 on average, and Michael Jordan's was 22. So, LeBron is an incredible clutch time performer and has put up massive numbers consistently in elimination games. So, seeing what LeBron does tonight will be interesting. Seeing if they can pull it off in seven games, if they win tonight, would be something to see. But I do wonder about the Cavs' potential in the NBA Finals. I don't think they could beat the Warriors again. The Rockets, I think, are too good for them as well. So I think the Cavs are pretty much done for this postseason, despite LeBron James' incredible play. And I think a lot of that goes to, praise the Celtics, because me personally, I think the Celtics are poised to become the NBA's next dynasty. they have a very, very young core there, and with, you know, guys like Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving still on the roster, as well as a great coach in Brad Stevens, Boston could really be building up something really impressive there, and be a regular name in the NBA Finals and Conference Finals for years to come. And a question I want to ask you guys is, how would you feel about Cavs Warriors Part 4? You know, it'd be if the Warriors and Cavs win this series right now, they would go to the finals for a fourth straight year. And, you know, personally, I'd rather see something new. I'm kind of tired of that same old thing. I don't know if that's good or bad for basketball, really. But I do, I mean, I certainly enjoy watching it. Just, you know, you'd like a refresher. You'd like new teams being there. And I think that goes especially well for this year when you have teams like the Rockets and Celtics that could be, that could be a pretty fantastic NBA Finals series there. But I do know this is up for debate in a lot of NBA communities between, you know, Cavs Warriors Part 4. Is that good? Is that bad? Do you want to see that? Do you not? So, guys, let me know what you think about that. You know, contact me on Twitter, all that kind of stuff. You can do whatever you want to relay that message to me. But that is going to wrap up today's show and this week's slew of shows. Thank you once again for tuning in to Locked On Clippers this week. Come back next week. We'll be catching up on this weekend's top stories, and I'll be previewing the NBA Finals as well. So thank you once again, Clipper Nation. I'm Garrett Corpenning. I hope you enjoyed today's show. You can find more from the Locked On Podcast Network on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and other online podcast platforms. I'll catch you guys next week, and I hope you have a fantastic long weekend.